Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. Guys, welcome back.
What is up?
Guess who's back? Hey, Eminem is back.
Oh.
Have you heard?
No,
I haven't. His new song?
I have not.
His new song? His new track?
Oh.
What do you say when it's a rapper?
I don't know.
His new beat? I don't know. I'm done. I gotta go.
Who are we?
Okay. Before we get into our story, did you ever watch the show Catfish on MTV?
Yes, I've seen it.
Okay. I definitely watched it way back in the day before it got like really cringy and scripted.
Yeah.
If you are like 20 and you have no idea what I'm talking about, there was a show on MTV back in the day. It actually, it might still be on. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't have MTV. Is MTV even still in existence?
I think so.
But it was called Catfish, and they would film these couples, like, finally meeting each other after carrying on a relationship, getting to know each other and thinking they knew who each other was. But the caveat was one of them was lying about who they were.
Right.
Right? They could have been lying about what they looked like or, you know, something else, like, more, like, occupation, age, et cetera.
Yeah, there were some crazy ones.
Yeah, there were some crazy ones. They just wanted a companion, right? It never went down great.
No.
Like, it never went down great when they finally met. And maybe a completely normal girl realized that she'd been talking to a 60-year-old guy who's been using his son's pictures. Or maybe it was a guy pretending to be a girl. And the guy who thinks he's dating a girl is now really angry because, you know,
that would really make somebody mad.
Yes. So today's case has to do with catfishing. But it takes catfishing to a whole other level.
Oh.
It goes far beyond a false identity and spirals through a dark, twisted mind of a killer and an impressionable group of teenagers willing to do anything for money.
Oh, no.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
And before I get into it, I just want to let y'all know that only two of the people involved in perpetrating this crime have actually been sentenced. The other four,
oh man,
will be soon.
Okay.
Current
event.
There are many players in this one.
Wow.
But the story really begins with a girl named Denali Bremer, who was 18 years old back in 2019. I think she was in a place of self-discovery, maybe a little bit of exploration, because about 6 months before this crime happened, she had reconnected with her biological mother, Nicole House. So Denali may have been trying to, I don't know, find her place in this world. And she seemed a little lonely because she sought out companion like most people do these days online. Using a fake name of Angel, she struck up a relationship with an attractive guy named Tyler from Kansas. She lived all the way in Anchorage, Alaska. So maybe, you know, someplace not so far away. Sounded great. Kansas will do.
Just somewhere her imagination can go to. Okay.
Yeah. She'd probably never been out of Alaska. He told her that he, at just 20 years old, he'd won the lottery.
Oh.
And he was a millionaire.
Okay.
Yeah. Unbeknownst to Denali, she wasn't really falling in love with rich boy Tyler from Kansas. She was talking to a big fat loser named Darren Schillmiller, who was in New Salisbury, Indiana.
Oh.
He was unemployed. He was 21, who lived with his grandfather in his basement.
Come on.
And he did a whole bunch of nothing in his free time because he didn't have a job.
It's
he didn't
always...
have money. And he just played video games.
It's always that guy.
I know. yeah. And this story might be about a big fat loser living in his granddad's basement. But it gets really, really much worse than that.
Oh, goodness.
He did use someone else's photos. He looked nothing like the guy's photos he was using. He thought maybe if I was a little cuter, someone would like me.
Mm.
He was right about that. Denali went for it.
Mm-hmm.
But he had an agenda.
Of course he did.
I'm not an expert in catfishing. That would be weird if I was. But I have a PhD in catfishing. Mm. But the many stories that I've heard about seem like the person who's catfishing believes that they're not good enough. Like, if they used their own photos, that it wouldn't garner the type of attention they're looking mm-hmm. for. Like, maybe it's an unattractive guy and he just really has never gotten a girlfriend. Or, you know, I feel like most catfishing...
Mm-hmm.
Maybe their intentions are more innocent than it seems.
Maybe.
I don't know. However, Darren, doing business as Tyler, had an agenda. Not that agenda. Mm-hmm. It wasn't to fall in love or to find companionship with anyone. It was a game.
Yeah.
To see just how far he could push someone to do whatever he wanted them to do from 4,000 miles away.
Oh, my goodness.
So fake Tyler, who I'll henceforth refer to as Darren, told Denali that he would pay her $9 million if she would kill someone and document it for him.
$9
million. $9 million.
And she's like, okay.
You know, could be anyone, person of your choosing. And I know you think it can't get any worse. Like, this can't get any more stupid.
But she agreed to it.
Okay. She agreed to it.
Am I jumping too
fast?
She
agreed to it. But he also wanted her to rape a child.
Oh, my.
And send him proof of that.
Candace.
I almost threw up in my mouth just reading that. But it's true. So, over the next several weeks, Darren and Denali... Tyler and Angel, whatever, corresponded on the computer, Snapchat, and I'm not really sure what all they discussed besides, you know, your standard, what's your favorite color, what's your favorite scary movie, but they definitely talked about killing someone, specifically in Alaska where Denali lived. He wanted her to do it. They talked at length about how it might be accomplished, and let's not forget raping a child. That's the last time I'll say that. I'm so sorry. I read the bail.
Do you hear the ice cream?
The ice cream truck. Is that Mr. Keatley? Hope not.
Oh, I hope y'all can hear that on the microphone.
Okay. So I read the bail memorandum for everybody who was arrested, and it sounds like it didn't take much convincing for Darren to get Denali on board with this plan.
Wow. So easy.
Mm-hmm. Let me just put my psychologist hat on for a second.
Please.
You know, the one that I got at the Army surplus store. this girl, Denali, she likely already had that violence inside her waiting to come out. I mean, she must have had some sort of deviance about her.
I mean, to already. Just easily say okay.
Yeah, I don't believe this was about money for her at all. I couldn't find much about what she was like prior to the crime. Like, did she have violent tendencies? Was she a troublemaker? Like,
right.
I couldn't find any. I feel like if there was stuff like that, it would have been in all the reports. But I didn't see any reports about her having like a criminal past or getting in trouble at all. But no one is going to agree to kill someone for millions of dollars if they don't already want to do that.
Well, yeah, I could agree with that.
And Lena. Will you kill someone for $200 million?
It's a no for me, dog.
See? There you have it. Well, she knew she was not going to be able to do this alone. She couldn't pull this off by herself. She needed a car. She needed a weapon. She needed someone to physically help her restrain this victim, etc.
I mean, talk about premeditation.
Thank you. Because in my notes, it says she really put some thought into this.
Mm-hmm.
It's too bad she didn't put this much thought into, like,
maybe I should, you know,
maybe finding a job or like a career path.
Oh, huh.
Oh, well. Lena, we have talked about this so many times about we've covered cases where there's more than one perpetrator and someone has convinced another person to kill. How does a person convince another person to participate in taking someone's life? Like, how does that even happen? Yeah. Okay. So there might be times where, like, a wife will convince her lover that her husband needs to get gone.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a big leap for me. Like, that, you know, emotions and, you know, that's a messy web and I can totally see that. But Denali, just 18 years old at the time, wrangled four other teenagers.
Four, not just one.
Nope.
Four.
Four other teenagers agreed to help her in this murder plot. Wow. She assembled Caleb Leyland, doesn't matter, your murderer, 19 years old. Caden McIntosh, who was 16 at the time.
16.
And two other minors who are young enough to have their names, dates of birth, redacted from all the documents and media reports. They're only referred to as Jane and John Doe, meaning they're 15 or younger.
That is, my head is spinning.
If, what? If Caden is 16,
yeah,
they have to be 15 or younger.
Oh, yeah.
So each of them were promised a substantial amount of money to help her kill someone. And they all said, okay, when?
Oh.
Like, I've got band practice at 5, but like after?
Yeah.
Or?
Oh. I don't know. I don't know what to say. Wow. Yeah.
So once she had gathered her little group of minions, they convened to discuss logistics, as you do. Mainly who their victim would be. She needs help with this part, too.
Mm-hmm.
Although she didn't really, because she kind of knew who she wanted to kill.
Oh, she already had someone in mind.
Her. Yeah, this obvious choice emerged for her pretty quickly. It would be easy because this person trusted her. This person thought Denali was her best friend.
Oh, no.
And this person was exceptionally vulnerable. The victim would be 19-year-old Cynthia Hoffman, who went by Cece. Denali and Cece met at Service High School in Anchorage. And even though she was 19, Cece had a developmental disability.
Hmm.
And she was really operating at like a 12-year-old level. And some sources indicated it was like a 7th grade level if you're talking about academics. So you can see how Cece might have thought her and Denali were besties when they probably weren't. Oh. You know, someone showing you attention at 12 years old.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just think of the 12-year-old mindset. All you want to do is, like, even her dad said all that mattered to her was having friends and, like, being accepted. Yeah. Now, Cece's dad, Timothy Hoffman, got really worried when she didn't show up to pick up some money that he owed her for a job on June 2nd, 2019. You see, she had helped her dad here and there with, like, his handyman, little handyman business.
Uh-huh.
I don't mean she just, like, handed him the tools. I mean,
she got knew how to
churn
it.
Concrete and like cut with a saw. I mean, she was helping him.
Huh.
So he would pay her for the work that she did. And the two were very close, especially since Cece had that developmental disability. He knew that money was important to her. So when she didn't show, he called to check in on her, but got no answer. And the relationship he had with all of his kids was that when dad calls, you answer the phone.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you're doing. Timothy told Boston.com that he didn't care if you were in church listening to the sermon of your life.
Uh-huh.
If daddy called, you answer the phone.
Yeah.
He didn't care if you were in the middle of a test that was going to take you to college.
Wow.
If I call, you answer.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's important.
Yeah. Sounds like a good dad. Like he yeah, just...
exactly. And of course, he's not going to call during, well, no. you know, those if important he knows... times. And, but if he calls, you need to answer because it's important.
Yeah.
Cece knew the rules. She knew the rules. And she was usually really great about checking in with her dad every few hours when she was out and about. Maybe she was working or she was with a friend because she did have a little job. But she didn't answer his call about the money. She didn't answer any of his subsequent calls either.
Oh, man.
That night, Timothy called police to report his daughter missing. But they told him that he had to wait 24 hours before beginning any type of investigation because she was probably hanging with her friends and would come home when she wanted. Yeah. Now, Alaska's news source indicated that Timothy was not happy with the way police treated Cece's disappearance in the beginning. They didn't really seem to take her disability seriously and acting like she was just maybe some rebellious teen. He was really offended by that.
Oh, absolutely.
He's like, I'm telling you, we're not talking about a normal 19-year-old who's interested in like going out back and smoking weed. Like that's not who we're talking about here. He spent that evening probably with a stomach in knots.
Ugh, bless his heart.
But
he'd
already called the police. I mean, you're a parent. What else do you do? What more can you do?
Yeah.
The police are supposed to do their job. So by the following morning, after she still didn't show up or return any of his calls, any sign of him being perturbed was out the window.
Like, yeah.
At this point, maybe he had convinced himself, well, maybe she is out. You know, I feel like you just try and justify.
Maybe
to be
her
like,
friend talked her into staying somewhere.
Yeah, maybe. But it was gone. Yeah. And now panic had set in.
Absolutely.
So he called the police again and he's like, hi, I know it's been 12 hours. Mm-hmm. I can't wait 24 hours. So I'm going out to look for her myself. Mm. He hopped on his beloved motorcycle and went cruising the streets and backwoods for miles and miles looking for any sign of her. By now, he had begun texting with Cece's friend, Angela. She said the last time she saw Cece was when she was asked to be dropped off at a nearby park called Polar Bear Park.
Oh, I've heard this story before. Like, not this story, but...
Yeah, we dropped her off at old Polar Bear Park.
Yeah.
Alaska. Don't you love it? Angela seemed to be really worried and expressed to Timothy she really hoped that Cece would get home safe and, like, I'm worried about her, and even sent words of encouragement, like, I know she'll be home safe. Like, she'll be home soon. Only this Angela girl that Timothy was texting with wasn't named Angela at all.
Huh.
It was Denali Brimmer.
Okay.
And she knew good and freaking well that Cece was not safe and would not be coming home because by now Cece was already dead.
Oh my gosh.
So let's talk about the murder. June 2nd, that same day that Cece's dad couldn't get a hold of her, it was in fact her last day on Earth.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Denali Brimmer and her friend Caden McIntosh invited Cece to Thunderbird Falls for a friendly hike and, you know, to get up to whatever. You know, when we were young and we were like, let's meet at the bridge, we didn't really have a plan.
Yeah.
We're just like, well, let's meet at the bridge and then we'll do
figure
stuff.
Figure out what we're going to do after
exactly.
that.
That's just the way she was like, oh, okay, I'm going to go hang out with my friends. Who has a plan, you know? Cece was just excited to hang out with her friends.
Yeah.
And Denali and Caden used Caleb Leyland's car to pick up Cece from the home that she lived at with her parents and siblings and drive to Thunderbird Falls. Now, the Thunderbird Falls hiking trail located in Chugach State Park is popular among outdoor enthusiasts. And stretching just a mile long is considered to be an easy trail.
Okay.
According to their website, it sounds appealing for all people. Maybe I would even.
Yeah, I want to go there.
Go take a walk there.
Mm-hmm.
The trail itself stretches through a gorgeous forest of birch trees and comes to a stunning 200-foot waterfall, Thunderbird Falls, the trail's namesake. Denali and Caden walked with Cece following the trail for a little bit before wandering off the path and just walking along the Eklutna River. Documenting their trek and sending Snapchats to Darren Schillmiller. You know, we're finna do it.
Yeah.
Watch.
Ew.
I can almost guarantee you that Cece did not bat an eyelash at,
no,
you know, this detour off the trail. She's probably just happy to hang out with friends. They're walking around. Who cares? We're going into the woods. It doesn't, like, yeah, nothing.
We're on an adventure.
Yeah, she was being accepted. And then now there's this new guy, Caden. Like, maybe she thought he was cute. Like, who knows? Yeah. She's like, oh, the new guy. He's being nice to me. And
oh, man.
So they walked along and they stopped at this like secluded clearing. She still probably didn't think this was weird at all because they were standing by the river. But things took a turn when Denali and Caden pulled out a roll of duct tape and a gun. They bound her hands and feet and mouth with the duct tape. Caden shot her in the back of the head and then they dumped her body in the Eklutna River.
Okay.
Eklutna River. Then they went to a nearby park and burned Cece's ID, some of her clothing, and the gun. Denali posted some Snapchat videos saying, quote, I'm sorry, everybody, my family, my friends. I guess you will hear from me when you hear from me.
No.
But I won't be back for a long time. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do it. End quote.
Oh, no.
But that wasn't all she did. She wasn't sorry. She sent Snapchats to Darren of Cece after they shot her. And dumped her body.
For proof, so she can get her $9 million.
Exactly. Exactly. Cece shouldn't be remembered as a girl with developmental disabilities.
No, she was much more
tricked
than that.
And killed and dumped.
No.
She was described as really warm-hearted and was excited about a newfound independence that she'd been working so hard for.
Mm-hmm.
She graduated high school. She had been in a post high school like life skills program where they would teach her how to operate in an adult world without adult capabilities, I would say.
Okay. Okay.
So like an adult toolkit in your brain.
Yeah.
She was excited to get her driver's permit. She was holding down a job in a restaurant and she had helped her dad with his projects and his handyman business.
She was doing more than her murderers.
So much. Exactly. And he called her his right-hand man. Like she was just always there. Her funeral was held at Faith Community Church in Anchorage. Now, police got a break pretty early on in this case from none other than Nicole House, Denali's biological mother.
Oh.
She told police that on the night of June 2nd, Denali and Caden came to her house and Denali was really upset and needed to get something off her chest about something she had done.
Oh.
Something they had done. She recounted the hike at Thunderbird Falls and the murder of Cece Hoffman. And when Caden chimed in to explain how he shot her in the back of the head and kicked her body into the river, Nicole said that he laughed.
Ew. Ew.
And Nicole said that at this time, she thought they were telling tall tales.
Well, yeah. How can you believe such like, a story?
Denali also told Nicole about the rich guy she met online.
Oh.
You know, and she's like, yeah, okay. And remember, she had only been reconnected with her biological mother for 6 months.
Yeah, right.
So maybe she didn't really know her to the extent that maybe her adoptive mother might have known her to tell the truth or not tell the truth. So she's just still getting to know her daughter. And, you know, she might have just brushed it off like, wow, they're really imaginative.
She has an imagination.
So the next day, Nicole said she saw Cece's dad on the news pleading for her safe return. And she was like, oh my God. Like she just knew.
Oh, wow.
And she called police immediately.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Chills.
How many times do we hear like the mother knew the whole time?
Yeah.
And, like,
she said something years later. Yeah.
So, Caden McIntosh was charged with murder in the first degree and tampering with physical evidence. And he was actually the first one to be charged because, again, Nicole's statement was that what they had told her was that Caden shot her in the back of the head. And I think Denali was kind of playing it as if like she didn't know that was going to happen.
Of course she would.
She was questioned multiple times after Caden's arrest, but they weren't really initially sure what her role was. She first told authorities, that her, Caden, and Cece went out to Thunderbird Falls to smoke weed and hang out, and then decided to photograph each other bound in duct tape. I mean, that's what I do with my friends. Yeah. It's not weird. She said Cece started to freak out because she was restrained.
Yeah.
And then they like said, oh, sorry. Like, and they took the tape off and everything. Around. But they said after that, she was mad at them. Why are you mad, bro? She said, I'm going to call the police and tell them that you tried to rape and kill me. And that's when Caden pulled out the gun and shot Cece in the back of the head. Mm-hmm. Putting all the blame on Caden. Mm-hmm. But the following day, I think she kind of knew she was in and over her head. And she admitted that there was this guy she'd been talking to online, and he asked her to commit the crime. Again, she's passing the buck.
Yeah.
By now, she had deleted all her messages with this fake Tyler guy who's saved in her phone as Babe. But because detectives have technology at their disposal, they were able to discover that the number was not for Babe or Tyler. It was actually for a guy named Darren Schillmiller. And oh my God, I would pay $9 million to be in that room when they told her.
To see the look on her face.
That Tyler did not exist. And that she killed somebody for a person who did not exist for money that did not exist.
Oh, yeah. To be a fly on the wall.
Further searches of her phone revealed the sickening plot to, don't make me say it again, the other thing she was going to do besides kill Cece. She told detectives that Tyler wanted her to, I got to say this. Mm-mm. It's in my notes. Oh, all right. Hang on, guys. Clench your butt cheeks. Ugh. She told detectives that Tyler wanted her to sexually assault an 8 or 9 year old, but they settled on a 15-year-old.
What?
Denali told him that she'd need to get the girl high so that she'd comply.
What?
And this was not Darren's first brush with a sexual endangerment of a child situation.
Wow.
The year before, in 2018, he was under investigation in another child pornography case, but no charges were filed. We're going to take a break because Elena's about to pass out and she's going to need a drink of water. Hard? A cold compress.
I'm so mad right now.
And we're back. Once the truth, you know, unraveled about this plot to murder Cece and how Denali was the ringleader of the whole thing, she finally relented and led police to Cece's body on June 4th, just 2 days after she was reported missing. Her body was resting in a creek along the bank of the Aklutna River. Then she told police about everybody else who was involved. How she used Caleb Leland's car and the other two minors who took part. Mm-hmm. And it's highly likely at this point that police had already figured out about the other people involved. Because they were all up in her phone.
Yeah.
They knew about Darren. They knew about all the other conversations she was having with everyone.
What a dumb girl. Dumb girl.
Stupid. And she looks dumb. She looks like a Dumbo. Not as cute as Dumbo. But prosecutors had put together a very airtight case for the court's consideration. I mean, they had plenty of digital forensic evidence to paint the clearest picture for the jury. Six people conspired to murder Cece Hoffman, and all six of them were knowingly complicit in this premeditated crime.
Premeditated.
There just was nothing confusing about it.
Yeah.
None of them could say, oh, I didn't know about it. They were all implicated in some way. Mm-hmm. They had confessions and all sorts. So everyone took a plea, which it surprises me that not one of them was like, for instance, Caleb Leyland, who just lent his car. He wasn't there. Mm-hmm. He wasn't there. So his defense could have been, well, yeah, they told me what they were doing. Like, they told me what they were going to do. They said they were going to go murder somebody, but I didn't believe them.
What in the world?
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't think he should have lied, but I feel like every defense.
If someone says, hey, I'm going to go do this, don't let them use your car.
I mean, oh my gosh. Anyway, I'm glad he's showing some accountability by admitting to his part in the murder. I'm just surprised that not one of them wanted to go to trial. Not one of them.
Yeah.
So Darren Schillmiller appeared in Anchorage Superior Court on January 9th, 2024, just this year, and entered a plea of guilty for solicitation to commit murder. And because he pleaded guilty, the prosecutors dropped the first and second degree murder charges. But don't worry, he was sentenced to 99 years. Mm. 99 years is the max. He didn't flinch in the slightest when his sentence was read out, showed no emotion, no remorse. And as he was being led away, Cece's dad shouted, I hope you rot in hell.
Oh.
I wish I could use the sound clip of Brittany from Vanderpump Rules / The Valley saying rot in hell. I love that. And he should. So the following month, in February of 2024, Denali Brimmer was sentenced. She pleaded guilty to the first degree murder and was sentenced to the max, mm-hmm. 99 years in prison.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Alaska don't play. In exchange for her guilty plea, the conspiracy to commit murder, solicitation of murder, tampering with evidence, and two second degree murder charges were all dropped. Prosecutor Patrick McKay said, quote, she may not have pulled the trigger, but this never would have happened if it weren't for Denali Brimmer.
For sure. Absolutely.
The judge presiding over the case said that the video Denali took of Cece being murdered was, quote, one of the most difficult pieces of evidence I've ever had to watch in this position, mm-hmm. end quote. And her bio mom, Nicole, testified against her at her sentencing hearing. At her sentencing hearing and told news outlets that she loves her daughter very much and is disappointed in the decisions that she made. I mean, what else are you going to say?
That's what I'm over here thinking. What a disappointment.
What a disappointment. Darren and Denali were also slapped with federal child pornography charges.
Wow.
They pleaded guilty to those as well and got 15 years for those heinous acts. And are both registered as sex offenders.
Good. Good.
Sick freaks.
Yeah.
I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, and I mentioned it again during the episode, that there were two other people involved in Cece's murder, Jane and John Doe, due to their ages, which are unknown. And because they're being prosecuted in juvenile court, things move a little differently over there.
Mm.
It's my understanding that they have not yet been sentenced. Yet, but the details about their involvement will likely be under wraps. Their sentencings will probably be under wraps.
Yeah.
Like, we probably likely will not get notified of that. Caleb Leyland pleaded guilty to second degree murder. This is wild. This is what I mean. It surprises me, mm-hmm. because he was not even present at the crime. He simply gave someone his keys.
He was an accessory.
An accessory. That's what but he pled to second degree murder, not accessory to murder.
Yeah.
I don't even know if maybe the charges are, maybe there are no accessory to murder.
Maybe
there's only second degree in Alaska. I don't know, but that's,
I mean, just,
that's
I'm
big.
Sure. Yeah. Cause I'm sure he feels that he's carrying that guilt.
Yeah. Yeah. So he admits to his role in the agreement to murder Cece, which was to provide the car, and he would get $500,000. According to an Alaska Department of Law press release from February of this year, Caleb was due to be sentenced June 10th, which at the time of this recording has already passed.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see any update about his sentencing. I made a few calls to the DA's office, but was not able to get a hold of anyone to see if his sentencing had taken place. But he is facing 25 to 75 years.
Wow.
That surprises me too.
Yeah.
What I'm learning about Alaska, violent crimes are not commonplace there.
Right.
It just, I mean, they happen.
Mm-hmm.
But it, statistically speaking, it doesn't happen as much as you might think. These sentences, these punishments, these, what he's facing, that is so harsh.
Yeah.
For just lending your car. I'm not saying he shouldn't be punished. Right. He should. Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, because people have done
less for pulling the trigger.
Yeah. Yeah.
So 25 to 75 years. I'll keep an eye on that and let you know. Caden McIntosh also took the plea deal offered to him by prosecution. They said, plead guilty to second degree murder and we'll drop the rest of the charges. I think there were like four other charges. Caden McIntosh pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
Which is surprising to me. His sentencing is scheduled for November of this year. And he's facing 30 to 85 years. So he is looking at more time for pulling the trigger. But we have seen this before, too, in other cases where the mastermind gets put in for life.
Yeah.
And the person who pulled the trigger gets less time.
But it should be the same, in my opinion.
Should be the same. Now, Cece's dad, Timothy Hoffman, was his daughter's biggest supporter from the moment Cece was found murdered and throughout every court appearance. He was there with her picture in a frame.
Advocating
for them to serve the maximum sentence.
Yeah.
Timothy was the president of the Christian Motorcycle Ministry. He organized a memorial motorcycle ride in honor of his daughter's life after she was murdered. All were welcome to attend the event, and it ended up becoming an annual ride.
Oh, I love that.
Because there were so many people who wanted to do it again. So he wanted to carry on publicly remembering Cece and bringing awareness to the homicide rate in Alaska.
Mm.
I'm not sure if every year was the exact same, but I found a posting from the 2022 ride. So I can tell you about how that one went. So they started at 11 a.m. at Lake Spinard. They rode by Faith Christian Community Church for a salute, because that's where her funeral was.
Aww.
They stopped at Hostetler Memorial Park. Then they rode to the site where Cece was murdered at Thunderbird Falls before arriving at their final stop, which was at the Denali Harley Davidson. I know. Too bad it wasn't named Denali.
Right.
Where there was food and live music. So it just sounds like quite an event.
Yeah.
This year's ride was the fifth annual celebration, and it started out just as exciting as the years past. Anchorage Daily News reported that more than 15 motorcyclists joined Timothy and his wife in the ride.
That's a good group.
Yeah. And friends and family without motorcycles followed in cars.
Oh, I love it.
Jeannie, his wife, rode on the back of Timothy's bike with him. And this was actually her first time actually riding the motorcycle with him. She usually followed in a car. Many people who didn't join the ride were waiting at the various stops along the way, like Thunderbird Falls, where everybody tossed roses over the bridge for Cece.
Oh, so sweet.
But a day filled with so much joy and love would turn very tragic.
What? What happened?
Around 1:30 in the afternoon, as he approached mile marker 49 on the way to their final stop at Big Lake, Timothy Hoffman lost control of his bike, tossing him and his wife, Jeannie, off of the bike, tumbling into the median.
Oh, no.
When witnesses rushed to their aid, they were both unresponsive. The couple were rushed to the hospital, where Timothy was pronounced dead and his wife was in critical condition.
Oh, my.
Timothy was not wearing a helmet, and though Jeannie was wearing one, she still suffered a skull fracture, broken bones, and a broken back. She had multiple surgeries, and the last we heard that she was not doing great, because this just happened earlier this month.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
I think Patrick McKay, one of the lead prosecutors in Anchorage, put it best. He said, I hope his family and friends take comfort in remembering that Tim died doing something that he loved with people he loved in memory of someone that he loved.
Yes.
End quote.
Oh, that's a good thought, though.
Timothy was a devoted father to his six children. He also had taken in other family members' children and raised them. He was a Papa Bear. He was just making sure his children were safe and sound, you know, wanting them to check in. He'd take them to and from school. He'd call them, you know, call me when you get there. Call me when you get home.
What a stand-up guy.
I know.
I wish I knew him.
It's just on the day that his daughter was murdered, he died celebrating her life. It's so sad.
Yeah.
But they're together. Like, I believe they're together.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like the saddest thing. And when I found this case, his death was what I found.
Oh, okay.
And then it led me to her case. And I was like, oh my Lord.
Ugh.
So it's just so sad because, you know, his wife is probably facing a lifetime of physical hardships
and emotional.
And now she's without her husband.
Yeah.
Her daughter's dead and she's left to care for all these children in the state that she's in. It's just so sad. Like,
it is heartbreaking.
One person
caused so much,
blew up so many people's lives.
Yeah.
It's mind-blowing to me.
And she's just sitting in prison eating her ramen
looking like Ren probably, and Stimpy. Like, she looks like Ren and Stimpy. Like both of them. I'll post a picture, don't worry.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, this one had me gut-wrenched.
Yeah, my, I remember when you wrenched. Told me you found a story that you just couldn't stop.
I couldn't stop. So
yeah, that's heartbreaking. And that was a roller coaster of emotion.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Thanks for hanging in there.
Yeah. Rest in peace, angels.
Cece and her dad.
Well, that was great. Let's do it again sometime.
We'll do it again. See you next week, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please consider leaving us a positive review and rating. To make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe to our show.
You can also follow us on Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or send case suggestions to cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.